TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Badlands Podcast, the only podcast out there that is 100% chiselled. I am Mags, and with me today, as always, my BA Baracus, Mr. T himself, Paul Tolley. How are you today, Paul?
Oh, I'm good. I'm feeling really cocksure at the moment, because obviously I beat Luke in our quiz last week.
You certainly did.
I've just won the latest Five Nerds Go quiz, so apologies if my ego gets away with me tonight, but I'm on a high.
Wow.
How are you?
I'm not doing too bad. It's been a bit of a rough week, but just doing this podcast is just going to make up for it, I suppose. It's looking good for Team Badlands then in the upcoming Brain Buster Survivor Series quiz then.
It's all about the training. Getting it packed in.
Get that practice in. So, Paul, today's guest is from the Sunshine State, from California. And you know what else is from California?
Where could we watch bar wrestling?
You can watch bar wrestling on powerslam.tv. And you can use our code BADLANDS to get 30 days of Powerslam TV on us. That is code BADLANDS at powerslam.tv.
Are you looking for the newest and hottest in the world of pro wrestling? Then check out the amazing action on powerslam.tv, the biggest indie pro wrestling channel in the world. Get over 6,000 hours of the best events from over 150 of your favorite promotions from 20 different countries around the globe. Brands like Progress Wrestling, Evolve Wrestling, Combat Zone, Defy, PCW Ultra, PWX, Over the Top, Shine, and hundreds of others with fresh content added every day for only $5.99 per month. Get your free trial today at powerslam.tv.
So, like I said, our guest is from the sunny state of California, a million miles away from the rainy country of England.
Just a bit.
He's the bearded one himself, Chris the Beard Pinero. Chris, how are you today?
Doing great, guys. How are you guys doing today?
You're not too bad. Like I said, it's absolute horrific weather up here in the north of England. I don't know how it is down the woods.
Yes, it's been pretty bad today. I think it's winter now.
Yeah, it's getting there. And if British Parliament has its way, it'll be the winter of content.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, we're not here to discuss politics. We're here to discuss something way more important, wrestling. So, Chris, give us your Mount Rushmore of the greatest wrestlers of all time for our collated list.
All right, so my Mount Rushmore is a bit people's Mount Rushmores, because most fans, we look at, you know, what we love and who we love the most. And I unfortunately don't work that way. I consider to be great, you have to transcend the sport. And so I use my mother as the test. If my mother can look at a picture of the wrestler and know who they are, that person transcended the sport, because she does not watch wrestling, period. But there are certain stars that she could pick out a crowd and be like, oh, that's that WF guy. So for me, the best of all times, the ones that transcend the sport themselves, of course, you got the immortal one. You got Hulk Hogan. You got the Macho Man, Randy Savage. You have Stone Cold Steve Austin. And you have The Rock.
Absolutely great picks.
Fantastic picks. Looking for, here we go.
And I feel really bad with that Mount Rushmore, because my favorite of all time is probably The GOAT. But I can't even put him on that list, because if I showed a picture of Chris Jericho to my mother, she would go, who's that?
You can have him on your honorable mentions, though.
For sure, she's not a Fozzy fan.
not a Fozzy fan, doesn't like hard rock, doesn't like pro wrestling. I don't know how I came out.
You might want to introduce her to a little bit of the bubbly.
She doesn't drink either. That's the other thing.
She'll never know Chris Jericho then.
Never.
So, Paul, how does Chris's picks affect the collated Mount Rushmore?
That's some great choices there, and it's really, really interesting. Actually, that's the fourth week in a row Ric Flair hasn't had a vote.
Wow!
So now, you know, we were having discussions. What are we going to do? Ric Flair's running away with it. Are we going to promote him to a different division? What are we going and all that? And suddenly, he's on 20 votes, and Austin and Rock are on 19.
Ooh!
So he's not. So he's no longer running away with it. And Chris Jericho, even though Chris's mum doesn't approve, he's still there in fourth place with 14 votes. Hulk Hogan just snapping at his heels with 13.
The Rock and Austin core, because, I mean, I think Flair had a good 5 or 6 votes lead on him at one time, so that's really interesting. I think you cursed Ric Flair when you said that he'd been voted every single episode. I think that's what you've done, Paul. You cursed him. Plus, he's trying to steal the man back in it, so...
And take nothing away from Ric Flair. I mean, the old saying you can have a 3-star match with a broomstick is absolutely true. He's an incredible wrestler. He's an incredible guy on the microphone. But you put his picture up against, you know, some of these other people, and nobody knows who he is unless you've been watching wrestling and unless you're really into wrestling. He was on an Atlanta Falcons game the other day that was on TV here. And my mom was like, why is that guy allowed in the locker room? And I was like, that's Rick. I'm not even going to bother.
But you were right in what you said about your picks, though. There are some wrestlers that have transcended wrestling, and there's some amazing wrestlers who just can't get that mainstream buzz. So, yeah, I've really interesting picks. I enjoyed them.
Yeah, Randy Savage, an interesting one. Because I don't know, I don't get the impression, perhaps it's just in the UK, that he's transcended over into kind of popular culture. Is that more of an American thing, do you think? Or missed it?
It might be. I mean, the face of Slim Jim over here for years. I don't know how well Slim Jim does international, but you almost couldn't see a Slim Jim in a supermarket without going, oh yeah, snap into a Slim Jim. With, you know, it was Randy Savage. That's what he did. He was Slim Jim.
We don't have Slim Jims. What is a Slim Jim?
It's like a pepper.
All right.
Yeah, it's a stick of meat product.
Alleged meat.
Alleged meat.
We've got our own crazy Pepper Army monster over here, so he was obviously... Randy Savage was no match for him.
No way.
I have a suspicion that Chris's mum may be a fan of Spider-Man, and she saw him as Buzzsaw.
Hey, he was ready, man.
So, Chris, your topic was... And it was a really interesting one to research, the Mount Rushmore of shocking title wins. What is your first pick on that Mount Rushmore?
My first pick is the first time my jaw hit the floor watching pro wrestling. And it was Survivor Series 94. And I don't know if you guys can go back this far, remember this far. Bret the Hitman Hart loses to Bob Backlund in a submission match for the WWF title.
Yeah,
that was a shock. Backlund must have been early 50s back then. I mean, he was in he was big in the 70s and 80s. So for him to come back and be the WWF champion, I think if I remember rightly, wasn't it a way to get the title onto Diesel without Bret losing to Diesel? If I remember rightly.
Yeah, Diesel beat him at a house show 3 days later in Madison Square Garden, I think it was, in 15 seconds.
Yeah, I totally agree. That was a bit of a shocker. A 14-year-old Mags did not really understand how this old man called Bob Backlund was able to be, who was around that time, probably the best wrestler in the world.
Yeah, for sure.
Crazy. It's crazy. I remember hearing about it. I don't think I had access to watch it at the time, and... It blew my mind. I didn't even know who Bob Backlund was.
I had seen him in a couple Royal Rumbles. He made some guest appearances for the WWF before that, where he'd come into the Royal Rumble with, you know, his trunks pulled up over his belly button and the the tube socks up above the wrestling boots and just look like a complete dork. And here he is. He's the champion. On pay-per-view, no less.
Yeah, exactly. And it wasn't that long ago that he was actually still working with the WWE. Didn't he have a run where he was trying to get Darren Young to be a big star again?
Yeah.
Yes, he was.
He was his motivational coach, wasn't he?
Wow. Bob Backlund, great pick. Great start to this Mount Rushmore. So, Paul, I don't feel like I've gone first for a long, long while. So I think going to go first. How does that sound?
Well, it sounds like you've made your decision.
So, my first pick goes back a little bit earlier than Chris's. I'm going back to June of 1987. Back in them days, in the 80s, lengthy title runs were kind of the norm. Hogan, I think, was 2 years into a three-year run as WWF champion. Ricky Steamboat had just beat Randy Savage at WrestleMania 3, so I think he was like a couple of months into that run, which was arguably one of the greatest matches of all time. So there was nothing really to say that Ricky wouldn't go on a lengthy run of his own, apart from the whims of one Vince McMahon. He lost that title to the Honky Tonk Man. Now, back then, I mean, Honky Tonk now is a legitimate legend. He went on a record-breaking run with the Intercontinental title, but at that time, he was a glorified jobber. The crowd absolutely went mental. Nobody in the right mind thought that Honky Tonk Man was ever good enough to beat Ricky Steamboat, and yet he did. And he held on to that title for 454 years. years. It felt like years. 454 days. And that, like I said, is currently still the record. And he would then also lose it in shocking circumstances. But I will keep that under my hat in case anybody brings it up as their picks. So, yeah, my first pick is the Honky Tonk Man beating Ricky Steamboat in June of 1987.
Yeah, it's a great pick. I like it.
Got to go old school on these shocking victories.
Yeah, and I think that one is important, not only just as a shock, but as history-making, because here you have a guy that really outside of the WWF made his name, but he was nothing to the WWF at the time. He comes in and upsets probably one of the best workers of the day. And like you said, 454 days later, he finally loses the darn thing. And still to this day, that's a record. And he's still at a convention putting up signs saying the greatest Intercontinental Champion of all time.
Mental. Absolutely mental. Paul, are you vetoing that pick?
No, I like it. It's a great pick.
Thank you very much. Chris, your second choice.
You went old school. I'm going to go new school, and I'm going to go to February of this year. Hiroshi Tanahashi had just won the IWGP heavyweight title in January, only to lose it to Jay White, who I don't know. I'm pretty new to the whole New Japan thing, but I had seen Jay White in Ring of Honor a lot. You know, and then he comes to New Japan. He leads the Bullet Club. He's IWGP heavyweight champion in, I think, like 6 months after arrival. Just absolutely shocking to me that he could beat the ace for the biggest prize in New Japan so quickly.
Paul, as our New Japan expert, your thoughts on Jay White at the top?
Absolutely great choice, and I'm going to prove it was a great choice by putting it in as my first entry.
Really?
Yeah, I had it written down as my first entry. Like Chris says, Jay White, he's 26 years old. He'd come back from Mexican about just over a year before. Mm-hmm. It was shocking because Tanahashi had just won the title in a kind of redemptive fashion. He'd gone through the G, he'd won the G1. Everyone said he was past it, but he won the G1, and he went to Wrestle Kingdom and he beat Kenny Omega. And this was his first title defense, and Jay White beat him. And it was shocking because Jay White, I'm pretty sure there was no interference and no cheating from Jay White. He made Tanahashi tap out just clean, basically. It was shocking because they were going into their next pay-per-view was Madison Square Garden on WrestleMania weekend, and New Japan had this massive faith in Jay White to main event that show. I think genuinely was shocking, and I think it's already proven to be a really good decision. I think Jay White it put Jay White in that top tier of talent. It cemented Jay White as definitely a world class bad guy, and it enabled him to continue his feud with Kazuchika Okada. They've had two fantastic matches this year already. As good as he was, I was genuinely really shocked that he won the title that soon.
Yeah, I couldn't agree anymore. It was on my honourable mentions anyway, so it would have definitely made its way onto the Mount Rushmore in some fashion. absolutely worth shocking. And it was interesting how Jay White's character alive in that from that having that excursion and then coming back. What a great character he is, and so deserved. I think maybe you could say it's a little bit early if you think about it in context, in the same time that Jay White has entered Chaos, beat Okada, then won the title, then joined Bullet Club. We still haven't finished Naito's redemption story. So I think maybe it's shocking because New Japan kind of do take the time over stuff like this, and it does feel quite quick for Jay White. But yeah, absolutely a very, very shocking victory. So if that's Paul's first pick, it goes straight back to you, Chris, for your third.
All right, so my third, I almost didn't include this on the list, but then I remembered just how strong it was for 15 or almost 15-year-old me. It's the infamous put butts in this comment, January 4, 1999, Mankind beating The Rock for the WWF title on Monday Night Raw, Tony Schiavone with the call of a lifetime. Yeah, that'll put butts in the seats, and 800,000 homes switch channel Raw. But it was one of those moments as a kid, like I had been, like I said, I was almost 15 years old. I had been watching wrestling for quite a while. Mankind had quickly grown into one of my favorites just because he was so different and he kept changing his character. He went from an absolute madman to this dude in a button-down shirt that had tucked into his wrist trunks inside. And here he is, just a throwaway match with The Rock that nobody thought anything about it. And then when Tony Schiavone, I was one of those 800,000 homes, when Tony Schiavone said, Mankind's going to win it, yeah, they'll put butts in the seats. I went, wait, Mankind's going to win the title? Change the channel. I never changed back. I just absolutely wanted to see it. But it just so shocking, even knowing it ahead of time from Tony Schiavone, changing the channel and watching it go down, it was still just such a shock and such a surprise, and just further cemented the legend that is Mick Foley now.
Yep. Again, another great picker. Over here in the UK, we didn't kind of get WCW as easily, so we tended to be WF guys, so that was something I was watching pretty much live, yeah, and it was an absolute shock. But I think for me, the more interesting thing is he was basically rejected when he were at WCW. They absolutely wasted his character. I mean, they had Cactus Jack as a hobo, like where they were looking under like bridges and tunnels to find out where he'd gone missing, and for him to be the WWF champion and be the person who, like I said, and nearly a million people switched over the channel just to see it. I love that pick. Absolutely love it.
Yeah, great pick. What a moment. It was so good.
And you're right. And it's kind of one of them moments what you don't really get now. I mean, obviously we've had the Kofi moment and the Daniel Bryan a couple of years ago, but you just don't get those kind of shocking moments like that anymore. I mean, it's a bit sad because wrestling should be full of shocks, I think. It should be shocking. You shouldn't know what's going on, and unfortunately with the way Twitter is, we know everything what's going on months and months in advance usually.
Yeah, I was thinking, is this a reason? I just know there's no dirt out there. You know what's going to happen. Nobody seems to be no leaks, and every match is a genuine surprise. I think it plays out.
Yeah, it definitely does. We were having discussions about the AEW TV deal over here in the UK. It's just got announced, and for me as a wrestling fan, I probably won't end up watching the show on a Sunday morning because I can't not find out the results from a Wednesday because I'm on Twitter and people will be sharing those results and that will take away for me watching the show. And then to have to get up at 8 o'clock in the morning to watch it, it'd be like, nah, I'm good for that. I'll have seen it all I needed to see on YouTube or on Twitter. So I think you're really in the foot by AEW to do that. It's in this day and age where spoilers, people are so quick to want to spoil things.
Oh yeah, you got title changes being posted on Twitter with full video moments after they happen. If that happens to AEW, I mean, they're going out live on TNT here in America. But to hit Twitter at, say, you know, Eastern time on Wednesday, it's going to be all over the net before you get a chance on Sunday morning. And then the fix to pay $5 a month to watch it on Fight TV, which, no offense to them, I love Fight TV. I'm very thankful for what they do for wrestling fans with the free content and the pay-per-views, making it easy to stream on any device. But they don't have the best track record of streaming live, especially when you're trying to throw it onto TV or throw it onto your, you know, through a computer in a household where you're using more than one device. And, you know, I've got an almost teenage daughter who loves her phone and loves streaming Netflix. So I don't have the greatest bandwidth available to me at all times to do that with Fight TV. So I feel for you guys over there internationally, not only having to pay more to watch it live, but then to kind of put your trust into Fight TV and really hope that their, you know, servers are good enough to broadcast this without hiccups live, not spoiled.
Yeah, I think for me, the Fight TV thing is kind of like putting a plaster over the situation. I think Tony Khan has realised that this RTV deal is probably not what he thought it would be. And it's just the video going round of Cody saying their UK TV deal makes his look like it's, it really, really does, unfortunately. But that's an argument for another podcast, I suppose.
Yeah, and I'm sure pretty much every wrestling podcast hit that up in the next week or so with Cody's comments in comparison as to what they actually delivered on. I was just having a conversation with someone over Twitter this morning. He said he's flat out going to watch one until they straighten it out and make it live broadcast in the UK and Australia, and they're dealing with the same issue. And he's like, let's watch NXT or AEW until they get their heads out of their butts. Not exactly his word, paraphrasing. He goes, but until they get their heads out of their butts and figure out how to broadcast this live to my country, too. He's having to wait till the next morning to watch NXT on the WWE Network, and he's going to have to wait 4 days to watch AEW. And he's like, nah, you just lost me as a viewer.
Yeah, I can totally understand that. I mean, the NXT, that for me is acceptable. The day after, I can avoid Twitter for a day, I suppose, but not when you're asking to avoid majority of the week. I think it kind of reminds me of wrestling from the 80s and the 90s, where you could get away with having a show that was a week, 2 weeks late because you didn't have the slightest clue. But like we said, in today's society, away, and that'll just absolutely ruin it for me.
Yeah.
So, and it is the second pick. Now, I've got a couple left. Which one shall I go with? Oh, I think I've got a feeling what Paul's second pick is, so I'm going to go with the one that I don't think he's gone for. And again, I'm going very, very old school. I'm going back to November of 1985. And this is referred to as the original Scrooge. I'm talking about when Wendy Richter was screwed the women's title by the Spider Lady, also known as the Fabulous Moolah. Even though Richter had quite a high profile in WWE because she had the links with Cyndi Lauper, she was at odds with Vince McMahon over contract disputes, I believe. He tried to get her to sign a new contract and she wasn't happy about it because she wanted to stick to the arrangements of her original deal. And Moolah, who was the politica that everybody knew her for, got in Vince's ear and got Vince to concoct a plan where they screwed Richter out of the title. So under the Spider Lady costume, Wendy Richter was rolled up for a pin, which she actually kicked out on the one but the ref ignored it and still pinned and switched the belt. Apparently, according to wrestling legend, Wendy Richter went backstage, got into a car, still in her ring gear, didn't speak to anybody, and went home and never spoke to Moolah ever again. So my second pick is the original screw job, the Spider-Later beating Wendy Richter.
Ooh. Let me think. I don't know of it. So I think it would be harsh to veto it. Because I'm
if you wish to veto, veto.
I feel I've taught me something. So I'm gonna have to leave it up there.
Wrestling 101 with Mags.
Well, I think one thing that has to be said about that too, and Wendy has said it much later in interviews, how did she not recognize that something was up? Mm-hmm. The Spider Lady had been Penny Mitchell for 2 years in the WWF at the time. And then the Spider Lady comes out, she weighs 40 pounds more, she's 2 inches shorter, and she doesn't have the same body type at all as Penny Mitchell.
And flowing red hair at the coming out of the bottom of the mask.
That's right. Red hair was peeking out underneath the bottom of the mask too, like she can get bitter. Like she has, I think she looked back on it, and you know they say hindsight's 20/20. So I think she looked back on it and said, "Oh man, I really screwed up there." She definitely wasn't Penny Mitchell. But for some reason, like as soon as she came, showing that's not Penny. What's going on here? And why is this referee the one refereeing the match? Because that normally a women's championship referee in the WWF.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it, like I said, though, it is sometimes 20/20. You don't realize that you're getting screwed until you've been screwed. And Wendy Richter definitely got screwed.
Fascinating. I'm gonna have to go back and check it out. I can't veto it. It does sound really good.
Yeah. She was it came out obviously after her death. But the politica was Fabulous Moolah. She put on this like facade that she was the women's wrestling scene and that she was helping boost it when really she was keeping a lot of girls down and the WWE booked through her and she only allowed certain wrestlers to work there and nobody was allowed to beat her and stuff like that. Yeah, she was the Schmackle of her day in politicking.
Well, and between her booking for FIFA, I think she made something like 65% of the wages the women wrestlers made per show, which when they all work through you and you're working for Vince too, you're making a hell of a lot of money to do very, very little. But they all lived at her ranch and paid her rent. They all paid her a booking fee. Like, she was just ripping them off left and right. But as I've said with other ripoff artists in this industry, if you can make a ton of money off of it, good for you. I mean, she found a way.
Yeah, no, the finessing money is one thing, but it's the other kind of media stuff that kind of ruined her legacy almost. Pick is Wendy Richter getting screwed by the Spider Lady. Paul has decided not to veto, so Chris, it's up to you for your last pick.
Last pick, I'm going to go about 5 years ago, April 7th, 2014, the night after WrestleMania, and AJ Lee is in the ring, and she is bragging about how she's beaten every diva on the roster, and we get the debut of Paige, who pins AJ Lee and wins the Divas title on her first night on Raw.
Great, great pick. Great.
One of my favorite ever moments.
Yeah, it's sad that her career got cut short because of injury. She literally could be the face of women's wrestling. And yeah, what a great moment that was, especially for us Brits with her being one of us. It was a very proud moment.
Yeah, and I don't think she gets enough credit for the women's revolution. Her call up, in my opinion, her call up to the main roster that really started to kick that in the butt and really started to get people, hey, there's women in this NXT thing that can actually wrestle. Here's one of them. We want more of this.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, Paul, the final yes. on our Mount Rushmore of shocking title victories.
Okay, I'm not going to go as far back as you've been going back. But I'm going to go a bit further than Chris just did. I'm going to go to the turn of the millennium. And I'm going to go to the absolute millennium man, Mr. YJ. and I picked this because it's a shocker for two reasons. In April 2000, he challenged Triple H on an episode of Raw. I think he goaded him in by sharing some choice words with Triple H's lovely wife, and managed to get Triple H to a world title match there on Raw that night. To the shock of absolutely everyone in the arena and everyone watching at home, with some help from the APA, who Chris Jericho had hired to stop any McMahon-Helmsley shenanigans, and the help of Stephanie's misplaced world title that she threw into the ring a little bit too close to Chris Jericho, Chris Jericho won the match. And it's one of the loudest kind of pops I've ever heard on a Monday Night Raw show. It was amazing. I think it put Chris Jericho up into that next bracket, because at that time he was still an intercontinental level guy, I think, immensely popular, but by no means anyone was thinking he was a world champion. They had a great, classic Triple H style match full of drama, and then obviously later on in the night, the shocking twist that Triple H forced Earl Hebner to reverse the decision, and the title match never actually happened, and Chris Jericho wasn't actually a world champion that night, and we all think that nothing happened at all, which in itself was shocking.
Now, Paul, I love me some Chris Jericho, and it's hard for me to even contemplate vetoing it. But you did say to yourself that this title change didn't actually happen. So it's not. Can it be a shocking title victory if it didn't actually have
a belt that really good on him?
And he is my goat as well. You've put me in quite a quandary here, Paul.
And it was so interesting. I saw Triple H and Chris Jericho did not like each other. And I reckon Chris Jericho really did like Stephanie McMahon. They are equal chemistry. I just think the three of them together tell such amazing stories, because there's so much energy they're created by how much they dislike each other.
I've got a hooker of a honourable mention that I could veto in this place, but I can't veto my boy Chris. So you serve that. So Chris Jericho not winning the WWF title goes up the Mount Rushmore of shocking title victories.
See, I thought it was later into Vengeance 2001, where he beats Stone Cold and The Rock on the same night to be a double champion, first undisputed. Yeah, I thought that's where you were going. I almost forgot about the Monday Night Raw that we were supposed to forget about. But, oh, man, both those great moments. And, yeah, I got to agree with you, Paul. That pop when he picked up the 1-2-3 and we all thought he was the new WWF champion was unreal for Chris Jericho.
Yeah, I totally agree. He's my goat. It can stay on. And I had the double win over one of my honorable mentions. I also had, obviously, probably the most recent one that I looked at, the Jinder Mahal winning the title and running with the belt for quite a while. But then I'm surprised that didn't actually get picked by any one of us, the Montreal screw job, where Bret Hart was screwed out of the WWF title. I mean, we obviously now know what was happening, but back then fans weren't as savvy. They weren't as smart as they are now, and nobody knew that Brett was looking to leave to go to WCW. And back then, Brett was the man, and the fact that Shawn Michaels screwed him out, well, to play the part in screwing him out of the title, I thought that could have gone on as a very shocking title victory. So, does any of you two have any honorable mentions?
Both of those that you just mentioned on my honorable mentions list, I kind of omitted Brett and Sean because we all kind of figured Sean was winning. Brett had been the champion for quite a while, but it's still made on my shocking list. But the last one I have that is shocking, was shocking at the time, now it's gone down as incomplete infamy, is David Arquette winning WCW World Heavy. I'm not going to lie, I watched WCW Days because, wrestling's wrestling, and I'll watch it. And it was such an out of left field moment that it was really, you were shocked, my God, why? And then you went, oh my God, what did I just watch? The guy from Scream is the world champion. what happened here? And I just remember my jaw hitting the floor, and then probably right afterward, my palm hitting my head and just kind of really worried about WCW.
Yeah, I think that was kind of like the one of the nails in the coffin. I mean, WCW had like this mainstream media kind of attention, and like Jay Leno being able to wrestle with Hulk Hogan, having the likes of Karl Malone and Dennis Rodman in matches. But yeah, to put the title on David Arquette, on Dewey, that is absolutely shocking. Paul, did you have any mentions?
I had a couple of recent ones. One to the Page moment. It's just one of my favorite moments of all time, and that was Dolph Ziggler cashing in on Alberto Del Rio to win. Similar reason that the crowd reaction was absolutely immense, and just how happy Big E and AJ Lee and Dolph Ziggler himself were after they won it. It's just a moment that whenever I watch it, really makes me happy. And I guess the Money in the Bank is always shocking in itself when they actually cash it in, isn't it? And the other one I rejected because it wasn't actually a title change, so I guess it doesn't qualify, but was when Brock Lesnar beat Roman Reigns at WrestleMania, because absolutely everybody had Roman Reigns winning, and he got pulverized. Yeah. And I remember actually feeling a big Roman Reigns fan, and I was getting ready to crack out a bit of the bubbly.
Paul, to your point, those Money in the Bank cash-ins, man, I was there at WrestleMania 31, and that's a brand new, at the time it was a brand new stadium. 49ers hadn't even played in it yet in Santa Clara. And when Rollins' music hit, the whole stadium shook from top to bottom because everyone was on there. They were cheering, they were hugging, they were high-fiving. And all it did was his music hit. He hadn't even won the title yet. It's one of those things with Money in the Bank. Thank you again, Chris Jericho, for coming up with this idea. It creates so many of those moments.
Yeah, absolutely. It's in some ways, it's not a shock because you know it's coming at some point. Suspense builds as each week goes past. And like you say, with the Seth Rollins one, no one actually thinks it's going to happen in the WrestleMania main event. So yeah, that could have easily made a Mount Rushmore itself.
So, Chris, we now need you to pick a topic for a future guest. Paul's going to give you a choice, and then I'm going to give you a choice, and then you pick whichever one you think is the most interesting. So I shall go first. We always talk about wrestling as being scripted, as being fake, but there are genuine hard bastards in wrestling. So I think we should look at the Mount Rushmore of wrestling's legitimate hard men.
Ooh. It's a good one. It's a good one. My counter offer is quite timely, actually, because we talked about New Japan quite a bit. You're pretty much the king of long-term booking. So I'm looking for the Mount Rushmore of long-term storylines.
Ooh. These are both fun choices. I think I got to lean over to the tough guys there, the hard men, because that's going to be an interesting Mount Rushmore to me to hear what people are going to come up with there, because you got all kinds of tough guys. Like, what defines a tough guy to you? And I mean, just looking back 70s, 80s, all the way up to today, there's some tough guys. To me, that's slightly edges the love term storyline with a good slow build.
Absolutely. I do. You know, if I were in Chris's shoes, I would have actually picked the long term storyline, because yeah, I am a sucker for a long term storyline. I just do not like this current like fad of stories being over in a month or two. It absolutely annoys me.
So let me ask you guys, because I've asked other people this same thing on the storylines. Do you think if they reduced the number of pay-per-views, like AEW, I believe, said they're going to do like 4 pay-per-views a year, do you think that would help longer storylines? Would that give them the opportunity to do it better?
Absolutely. I think that's exactly the problem. Is the necessity to fill a month going back, you know, maybe 2 years. It was more than monthly. Pay-per-views a year. No wonder there was no long-term storylines.
Yeah, I think another is the fact that pay-per-views are now 4, 5, 6, 7 hours long at a time, and they're cramming on so many matches. If you look back to the likes of the 80s and 90s, you were looking at matches on a pay-per-view. It might last two to three hours at a maximum. So you didn't always get every pay-per-view, where now it seems like that you do. And I think if you're going to go with like monthly pay-per-views, cut the time down and have where storylines don't have to end at that pay-per-view. They can carry on going past the pay-per-view and not even need a match at that pay-per-view. So, yeah, I think for me, I think take the reduce the amount of pay-per-views, but if you're going to stick with a monthly pay-per-view schedule, just decrease the amount of matches on them, because it's so hard work now sitting through a WrestleMania. 7 hours of WrestleMania is a slog, an absolute slog, and I love WrestleMania.
Oh, yeah. And I think maybe with the draft coming up in 2 weeks, if they're actually going to concrete these rosters, Raw and SmackDown, don't touch, no crossover, maybe they can do, you know, pay-per-views, the big four or five, have those be the cross-brand pay-per-views where the top stories continue. But do the monthlies alternate month and a SmackDown month, so they get a two-month build towards a pay-per-view. And I think that may alleviate some of this problem.
I totally agree. I think they tried it before, obviously, with the brand split, but because they're on a TV network now that will want more input, I can dare say that Fox will have a scene, and they can tell WWE that we don't want these wrestlers to be on every single show. So, yeah, it'll be interesting in the months to see how these TV deals work out and how they affect the likes of Raw and SmackDown. So, yeah, it's a fun time to be a wrestling fan, I think.
Absolutely.
Sure. I think there's a bit of an attention span issue as well. I think with the audience, they do have a short attention span, particularly WWE's. And I mean, at that point last year, we had the Charlotte Becky for half a year, let's say, from I think it's from SummerSlam to WrestleMania, wasn't it? And there was a lot of negative feedback to that towards the end, and which blew my mind. I think two wrestlers feuding for half a year and the storyline developing the way it did, it's fantastic. I think there is an attention span issue.
Yeah, and again, it boils down to this society we're in, where everything is given to us at an instant. And like I said, people are getting bored. For instance, Seth Rollins being champion, and he's been champion for that long. So yeah, there is definitely an issue with attention and social media sticking its oar in every now and again. I interrupt this program for a special announcement. Badlands now has merch. You can find our stuff at redbubble.com/people/DAJKurtBear, and we have things like stickers, phone cases, mugs, and even t-shirts. Or just search DAJKurtBear on Redbubble or any of our Brainbuster family, and back to your regularly scheduled program. So, Chris, tell the lovely listeners of Badlands where they can find you and your podcast, sir.
Well, I'm on the Twitter machine at Bearded Chris P. The podcast is the Bearded Wrestling Podcast. It drops, well, hopefully every Wednesday. It's a long way, but just dropped the 1 year anniversary show yesterday. I answered some questions from the Twitterverse there on the show, plus talked a little bit about just what's going on in wrestling. I do that every week. And sometimes there's been some surprises. I actually just interviewed Shelley Pack from a movie, Chasing Molly, with Kurt Angle a couple episodes ago. She was a delight. So I'm starting to get more and more of the surprises, maybe. But just past the 1 year anniversary. So that's the Bearded Wrestling Podcast, part of the Turnbuckle Topics Podcast Network. And of course, on YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook, Turnbuckle Topics, all one word. And there we are. Plus, my brand new theme song. Just got a theme song for my 1 year anniversary. That was fun too.
Congratulations on your 1 year anniversary and theme song.
Thanks.
Yeah, absolutely. Paul, it's that time again, sir. Time to go home.
Yeah, well, people listen to her very carefully. I really want people to tweet us this week and let us know their emotional victories ever, because I think we've missed loads there. there are loads, and like you pointed out earlier, the wrestling is at its best when it's shocking. And I think you could have, I think there must be hundreds out there that we haven't thought of tonight. So hit us up at Badlands Pod, Dave Kirkby. I'm at Ring Counter. And yeah, tweet us. Let us know what you think. Who do you think had the best Mount Rushmore tonight? Are you shocked Jay White got on both? That's certainly shocking to me. Get involved, because frankly, your opinion just doesn't cut it until you're willing to stone.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.